Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show.
Well, hello, and happy hump night from somewhere in Middle America. Boy, funny, a couple of weeks ago, we were like in the 60s and quite enjoyable. And then suddenly it dropped down to hard freeze, teens at night, 30s in the daytime. And what are we, just like the middle of November almost? Seems like it's way too early for that. Still looking for my coat. My coat and mittens. But hope you guys are all having a good week. I've had kind of a stretched last 10 days or so, but in fact, I was talking to our guest who will be joining us in just a moment, and I want him to know it wasn't me that cut him off. When the show starts, it takes off, whether we're ready or not. So for those of you who are new around here, Recovery Now is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. This is a we recovery program because it is in the we that we find the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers, which takes a good bit of warrior. Again, I'm your host, Kim Justice. If you want to know more about me, check me out at inaflash.org. Now, speaking of warrior, my guest tonight, I really enjoy. I've known him for a long time. I would have to look it up because, of course, you can't count on my memory, but I've been doing shows for 12 and a half years, and John has been a guest before, but he is a host now, and I was fortunate to be able to be his guest and be on the other side of the mic. And I got to thinking about that interview. We'll talk about a variety of things tonight, but I got to thinking about that interview, and I was kind of interested in interviewing him about the interviews to see what he's gleaned from talking to women. And I'll let him tell you a little bit about that show and what we were doing there. John Krotek is an entrepreneur, speaker, writer, and Army veteran, and want to thank him for his sacrifice and service always, but we did observe Veterans Day. After college, he went to work in corporate America and realized that despite doing well in the job, he wanted something more. He joined the Army later in life with the purpose of serving his country. The Army taught him discipline and how to value himself. After 3 years of active duty, he left the Army and returned to civilian life. It was then that he got reacquainted with his future wife, helping her to raise a family. In 2012, John hit rock bottom and survived a traumatic brain injury caused by an alcohol-fueled traffic accident. This unleashed his demons and forced him to finally cope with the trauma he experienced at a young age. over this time, he almost lost his marriage and family. With months of cognitive behavior therapy, or CBT, and hemp-based pharmaceutical treatment, he developed his own healing system by using creative pursuits for coping with trauma and saving his marriage in the process. John is currently involved with several creative businesses and holistic healing pursuits, which include Poetic Human, Heart Scribes, Women's Expressions on Leadership, Learning, and Liberty Podcast Show, Green Zone Hero, and Straight Outta Combat Radio. Gee, I don't think he's bitten off quite enough. For more on John, see johncrotech.com, and that's John, JohnKrotech.com. And for those of you, I've posted the show all over social media like I always do. If you're not by a pen or you're driving down the road, I will be mentioning the website a couple more times on the show, but you can always find it in my program notes. So you can go to shows at inaflash.org. You can go to Brain Injury Radio or any link that you might be listening from right now across social media. You'll notice johncrotech.com is there. So whether I can pronounce it or not in any given moment, you will find it in my notes. With that, I am going to welcome John back to the show. Really happy to have him. Hi, John.
Hey, Kim. Thank you for that wonderful introduction. It has been a few years since I've been on your show, and I'm just blessed to be back here. And, you know, you mentioned the weather where you're at. It's very similar here in Virginia. It was mid-70s and low 80s just a couple of weeks ago, and now we're in the same deal, 20 degrees and getting ready for the winter. So it's warm here now.
Seems soon.
Thanks for having me back. Yeah, too soon.
Well, I've been thinking about it. It took me a little while to go back, and this isn't a thing like, and I don't want to, geez, and right now you're a guest. I've just got to say, and you might know some of this, except you go back and work a little harder than I do. You edit, and I don't. What's said here is here. But with the show every week, I seldom get to go back and listen to my shows. And so I didn't listen right away to our show after I was there to do it. But it was a few weeks, I guess, and then I found it and I listened to the show and I thought, I wonder what you have, two things, maybe what you've gleaned, and why don't you tell the audience a little bit about what that podcast was designed to do and generally what we were talking about. But then my question to you is, have you gleaned that is maybe helpful or a pearl of wisdom you'd carry down the road, or do you find that with all the different female opinions, you're more confused than ever? So you and or other men who have been listening, because I'm sure they have been, a lot of guys have been talking to me lately, men, about the role changes and not wondering how they're supposed to act or react because women's roles have turned upside down. So you don't know whether being a gentleman in the old sense of the word is going to play like it used to, or if you're going to get dressed down for doing something that the woman can do for herself. So to me, it's not confusing, but I can see why to men it would be. So tell us a little bit about that, and then we'll go on and talk about some other things. And I wanted to say, tomorrow, coincidentally, you talk about bottoming out in the alcohol-related accident my brain injury didn't come from that, but tomorrow it'll be 35 years since I've had a drink. So
good for you. Well, you know, the drinking was never really the problem. It was on that particular night, but it was never, you know, I never really had that crutch, you know, like some people do with alcohol and, you know, to alleviate pain. I was just out having a good time with my friend, and one thing led to another, but that, you know, that's for another, we can talk about it. Couple things to unpack what you were just discussing and about the project with Well, where we did that interview, Women's Expressions on Leadership, Learning, and Liberty, freedom, of course. And, you know, you take a look around the world these days, and it's probably a serious understatement to say the world is just messed up. It seems like there's just issues with everything nowadays, it seems like. And if you follow the logic, you know, most of the issues that are out there have to do with leadership. And, of course, men being in many leadership positions around the world, I'm thinking to myself, why is it so crazy right now? You know, everywhere, from families to businesses to countries. And so I wanted to kind of get a perspective, not just from the guys, because we have these stereotypes that we grow up with, these molds that men have to fit, and same with the women. And I wanted to have a show where we tapped into the other side, for want of a better, you know, where I wanted to talk to women and get their perspective on the state of affairs when it came to leadership, especially because you just said, Kim, how some roles have been reversed. And it became kind of an interesting, you know, it became more interesting as I started to hear more and more of the ladies' stories on the show that we have many of the same desires. We have many of the same thoughts and leadership thoughts running through our heads. We're not alone. And so what there's a reason, and I go, that's another project that I'm working on called The Poetic Human, but there's a reason, and I think it goes back to purpose and calling. And about a couple hundred years ago, a little over 200 years ago, we entered the industrial age, and we became more focused on efficiency and profitability and proficiency, and we were taken out of the men in general, but people in general were taken out of livelihoods that had been passed down for centuries and put into more of an industrialized, mechanized office or factory type situation. And we were no longer, everything became about profits and profitability. And I think that over a couple of hundred years, we became disconnected. And when you look at these polls out there, it's always real high, 85 or 88% of the people polled aren't happy with where they're at in life. And, of course, if you're not happy, it's going to permeate. And I personally believe that, and this is general, you know, this is a generalized statement, but I believe that most people have not really answered their true calling in life. And it sounds so cliche, but once we get trapped, especially in the industrial world, you know, the first world countries, once we get into a lifestyle, we have to support it. And it's not easy to just tap out of a job and look for your life's ambition. You know, we get stuck. So we get into these positions where there's a lot of unhappiness out there, and there's a lot of anger, and there's a lot of interactions between people that are not real positive. We become an isolated world, so to speak. And, you know, it's just, you know, the show really focuses on leadership. And what I found out is that we're not alone. We have, like I said a second ago, we have a lot of the same desires, a lot of the same needs, a lot of the same beliefs. But because we don't talk to each other like we used to back in the day, we didn't have conversations in the digital world. I think people... It's just an interesting place where we're at right now in all of humanity. And there's a great distrust out there. And it's just, you know, we're looking for solutions to make interactions between people more positive. And these shows, like the show that we're on tonight, especially for the listeners who we're grateful for, when we hear these stories, we realize that we aren't alone. And I think that
right. When
I look at the interviews that I've had on that show, but on Straight Outta Combat Radio and Task Force Zen and Aho Radio and Mind Matters and some of the things that we've done, what I've gleaned is that we're not alone. We're never alone with whatever pain or whatever challenges we're going through. And when we think that ours is probably the worst case scenario, there's always somebody else that comes along that's in a lot worse position. That doesn't alleviate our own pain, but it makes us realize the humanity of all of this.
Absolutely.
I don't know if I answered the question. I had that same issue too. Sometimes trying to stay focused.
Oh,
but I'm
right.
Focused,
well,
so,
then we'll
you know,
have a good time.
Well, you know, your show especially, because it's geared right towards brain injury and healing and recovery. But when we can interact like this and have real authentic conversation, and, you know, none of your conversations are canned, which makes it even more authentic, which, you know, if we could just have more authenticity in today's world, people would feel like they belonged. And they say, you know what? I was listening to Kim and John, and they got a lot of the same issues I've got going on. You know, maybe I need to get out more. Maybe I need to talk to people more. Maybe I need to be more compassionate or more outgoing or whatever it is that keeps us so isolated and locked inside our heads. Maybe we just need to spread our wings and listen to more podcast shows. There's a lot we can be doing.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's probably a lot better than social media. You can actually think and absorb thoughtful topics instead of watching people talk smack on the video.
No, they do talk a lot of smack. You know, it's funny you say that, because there's one thing that I love about social media is that if somebody disrespects you or causes you consternation, now I'm not saying you can always just block them. And trying to convince somebody of your position sometimes can just drive you mad. I read something somewhere where they say that of all the people out there, a third of the people are going to absolutely love you. And then there's going to be a third of the people that are going to absolutely hate you. And then a third of the people that you come across don't even care either way. But isn't it amazing how we spend two-thirds of our time trying to convince those people that don't care or hate us why they need to like us? And if we spent more time harnessing relationships with people who cared about us, we'd be a lot less frustrated and we would save a lot of time. Because I can't tell you how many times I personally have tried to get to be accepted or to have somebody – you've got to think about it my way. And we beat our heads up against the wall. It doesn't have to be that way. So that's one of the benefits of social media.
Yeah.
If there's somebody out there that's trolling you or treating you, disrespecting you, not treating you right, block them. Get them out of your life.
Yeah. I learned that a while ago. But I've been pretty good about I realized the first time I turned it on, and I missed like the first generation, and I probably never would have even engaged in social media except when I started doing a podcast. I realized that was the 21st century marketing tool, that we don't send out reply cards or any of that stuff anymore.
No.
You know, like we did back in the day. And so, you know, I got on here and I've said this before, but I immediately recognized I've been treated for PTSD and depression, anxiety, but I also have an ism. And it doesn't matter if it was what I was doing in the 80s, that it'll be 35 years since I've done that tomorrow, or whether it's been substitutes I've had from time to time. Oh, thanks. I don't think about it or not think about it, but somebody sent me flowers today, so I was like, oh, right, the date. I'm even losing track of the date these days, but I guess what I'm saying is, you know, for a while, if you've got an addictive personality, it can be as benign as one time I had a friend from the South, and I drank a lot of herbal tea, iced tea, but this person from the South turned me on to sweet tea, and all of a sudden I was off and running on this sweet tea. boom, weighing like it, you know, after I'm drinking this sweet tea. It didn't take long, you know, to develop a taste for it. So, or it could be shopping. You know, I went through some QVC-ism in the middle of the worst of COVID. And shit, we got the winter coming again. This is not good news. But whatever it might be, if you do have a propensity towards an ism, I knew the first day I logged on to social media that this was a rigged game, because I could feel the pull. And if you know yourself at all, you know, if you've paid attention to yourself at all and your impulses and triggers and boundaries and all of those hot words that we hear, I could tell right away that they spent a lot of money making social media addictive, and, you know, the object for people to spend half their life on there and not out living their life. And then, you know, it became divisive and bias and all this. There's good things, you know, the people who joined. The other thing I think is funny is people our age, like, probably joined Facebook, you know, and I hear a lot of people say they joined because they never see their kids or their grandkids or whatever, so they joined Facebook. Well, when we all managed to get here, they all left and went to the next social media platforms, and we didn't follow them, you know, so what's left is probably a bunch of middle-aged people on Facebook. But,
well, it's definitely,
you know,
changed, you know, yeah. You mentioned that, you know, and it is, you're so totally correct, and you were intuitive to see it right away. You know, there's the chemical, and they have spent millions of dollars in R&D to keep you going back. And I was reading the other day where it's designed to elicit a response of dopamine. You know, we've probably heard this before and won't bore your listeners, but what happens is you get immediate acceptance or approval, and it feeds that dopamine hit. But over a period of time, dopamine leads to more cortisol, which is the stress hormone, which leads to more depression. And gosh, I'm glad you pointed that out, Kim, because there's actual illnesses, you know, the isms about the computer. They have places where people go to decompress and to actually take therapy to get off computers now. And you're right. And then you know, we couple the kids with this technical age. I wasn't raised on video games. So by the time they're 10, 12, 13 years old, they're already in that, you know, the digital world has them by the clutches. And that's what has happened. And then these kids get out in the real world, and you actually have to talk to people. You can't just come up and push a button on somebody's forehead and think that they're going to give you a response. You have to talk to them. So I think we're living in an age, especially in the developed countries, where people's social skills are lacking. And then it creates all this anger and all this animosity and all the things that are not good for humans to thrive. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And one thing I noticed, you know, when we're talking about, you were talking about, when you were talking about leadership in the show that we all want a lot of the same things, and that's, you know, to love and be loved, to have some semblance of happiness, however we define that. You know, some little things like that. And when you get interrupted by having your self-esteem dictated by how many likes or how much attention you get on social media, there's something wrong with that. You know, there's
Right, because I was told growing up, you know, my dad might have mentioned something like, maybe people have heard this before, you know, you're lucky to have, you know, two or three really good friends. And so when you get into the mm-hmm. social media world and you see people with a million friends, and it's like, I personally think it reinforces in some people that they're still not good enough. And if mm-hmm. you're on that for likes, like you just said, you need to maybe click it off and go look in the mirror and just tell that person in the mirror how much you like them. Because if you like yourself first, it really doesn't matter who likes you, does it?
That's what I was going to say to what you said earlier about the third and the third and the third. I kind of grinned and shook my head and thought, as I get older, I could probably split that in half. There's the ones that love me, the ones that hate me, and I don't give a shit. You know,
no,
about the
true.
Ones that hate me, I don't need to convince them of anything. It's just, you know, I don't usually have those kinds of conversations on social media that a lot of people do, but every now and again, and normally it's if I've had a bad, you know, maybe overstressed or a full basket, and something will pop in front of my. For one thing, I'm not on social media as much. In fact, I kind of made a big deal out of it for a while, telling people spending a certain amount of time on social media, or if they feel that pull, I gave them a dare, a challenge, and it was to stay off for 48 hours, turn off notifiers, don't go there for 48 hours. And if you feel like, wow, that gave me a lot of extra time, I actually got the laundry done and dusted and, you know, had lunch with a friend. If you feel like that, you're in good shape. If you're jonesing, you know, just reaching for it. No, I'll put it down. I'm not going to do this. I said I'd do it 48 hours. No, I'm not going to do it. And you're going through that internal dialogue, the hamster wheel, or you actually break down and you can't go 48 hours. You know, you've got to get on. You feel like you're missing life, you know, if you're not viewing it through the virtual posturing on social media, then you have a problem. That's a problem. And that problem will bite you in the ass somewhere along the way. And there's about a million ways that can happen, which I won't go into. Although I will say we really got to watch out for, I have dogs, but for those that have kids, I had a guest on about sex trafficking, and, you know, I thought I knew a lot about what that was, but I was shocked to hear this lady's show, and it was such an eerie feeling when she said, you know, you're a parent, you're in with your spouse watching a movie, and your little kid is in the other room playing those video games you think that you were talking about, and that a predator can be in the next room with your kid without him leaving the house. And your kid thinks that they're a boy or girl their own age. You know, the traffickers are really good at grooming. And it was scary. You know, I've seen for older grown-ups, you know, stalking situations, buying things. I would probably tell you, maybe some of you have been successful, but I would never purchase anything from an ad on Facebook. If it's a store that you've heard of, get off Facebook and go directly to the store's website and buy from there. Don't buy it through the internet where everybody's got access to your information. Go directly to the store. I know a lot of people who've not gotten the merchandise, but they have gotten their credit card tapped, you know, and so there's just a million different things that can happen. So, I've encouraged people to, and it's wound up working well for me. I never did turn on notifiers or any of that, because part of that has to do with my brain injury. You know, when I get a ping for a text or my phone rings and I have a voice message, those are that's my ping tolerance. So if I was getting a ping every time I had a social media deal, and I need to mention that on here from time to time, you know, that call me, text me, or don't think I'm ignoring you if you send me a message on Facebook, because I check it once a day, you know, usually when I get up in the morning. Mm-hmm. And I'm having my IV of coffee, you know, I check my mail and my social media, and then I want to live my life in real time, you know, not in virtual time, and move back to being able to keep that authenticity and being real. And that's why most of the time I'm one of those terrible people that, you know, post photography that I take, you know, not just the dogs, although plenty of them, but seasonal landscape pictures and stuff like that. And that's mostly so that same friends and family that we were talking about legitimately, but also listeners, you know, get the opportunity to know who I am. And that was a risk when I put it out there, because, you know, that's putting yourself out there. You know, personal things, activities. And, you know, that has never been a problem for me. So, you know, a lot of the people that listen to the show have gotten to know me by pictures I take and put on Facebook, and then my In a Flash page I just use to post pictures and something inspirational in between. And, you know, LinkedIn, I go there once a week. Sometimes, you know, that's to post shows in several groups, and sometimes to troll for guests. And and there is a guy, I felt bad. I hadn't done anything like this for a long time, because I quit doing the politic thing early too. It's not that I'm so intuitive. I just, some things I'm a quick learner on. I could tell that there was not even any point in talking to someone with a different point of view, because we're so, we were anyway. I don't know, maybe things will get better now. Who knows after these elections, but people were so bent one way or the other point of view that they really weren't interested in listening. And they have lined up, you know, if you look at their friends, a lot of them all only have their kind of people on there. They're not interested in talking about or listening about another point of view. I don't know if that's threatening or they're just clutching so hard to the belief system they have. That some
well,
of
everybody
those people,
wants to be right, you know. We all want to be right.
Yeah.
We all want to make sure that we're not making any mistakes. And, you know, the level of intolerance is just beyond anything that I've ever seen growing up. And you talked about, you know, sexual trafficking and predators and, you know, people – what's changed is people really haven't changed, so to speak. You know, all those human emotions are all still there. What's really changed is the technologies to make things easier for the nefarious people out there. You know, there's a guy by the name of Jerome Lanier. I saw him in a movie called The Social Dilemma, which was all about the internet and social media. And this guy, Jerome Lanier, talked to, you know, he's the guy that actually invented virtual reality, or one of the guys, and has worked a lot with artificial intelligence. And he basically says in his book, this relates to what you were saying a few minutes ago, he recommends that if you're having an issue with how much time you're spending in social media or online, he doesn't say take 2 days off. He says take 6 months off and force yourself to stay off for 6 months and then see if you'll go back. Because you said something earlier, Kim, about like when we all first came into Facebook. I think it was 2008 or 2009. Of course, we're from a different generation, but that's when I had my first Facebook account, and I think I was on it for 3 weeks, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think I went back for round number two in like 2011, and I might have been on for 6 months, and then I didn't even get back into social media or online again to any extent until like 2016. So... And then we had evolved, and it was a lot easier to navigate. But you're right. There's a world outside of this digital world, and people need to explore that more if they can. It's a conscious decision that you have to make. But I've found that when I spend time doing something different, not on the computer, it just seems so much more fulfilling. You know, we sometimes don't even know who we're talking to online. You know, they could have a avatar of a person, a guy or a gal, and it might not even be that person. So that's another interesting facet of the shadowy world, of the digital world, you know, the shadowy side.
Well, and may I give the girls a pointer? If a guy... who is a nice-looking older gentleman, any nice-looking older gentleman in a uniform that says widowed and lives in a unique place and you don't share any friends in common, don't friend him.
No, and that's great advice because, you know, and you're right because you can see, you can if you spend enough time and you're intuitive enough and you know the signs to look for, it goes for guys too, you know, that there's sometimes women that are that say things and it's kind of like, wow, we don't know any of the same people. And you're asking questions that you don't normally ask somebody when you first meet them.
Right.
So there is that shadowy side. And it just takes discernment and it just takes, it just takes a little bit of caution sometimes. And I think that that's what this computer has, you know, I think it's added to the distrust and mistrust between people. You know, but I wanted to get to something.
Well, it has. Please.
No, I wanted to get to something about, you know, likes and acceptance and immediate approval. And this goes back to cognitive behavioral therapy and the brain injury. I'm sure that people that have experienced that understand that insomnia sometimes is a byproduct. And after my accident, it was almost immediate where I was getting literally no sleep. I was lucky to get anything sustained past 2 hours in one time, and I was lucky to get 4 hours a night. And, I mean, this went on month after month after month. And of course, you get agitated, you're not getting your rest, nothing seems right, you can't stay focused, you're out of control, at least I was. And then when I finally made the call to the crisis center, I mean, this happened in the first week of therapy. It took me a while to get there, took that crisis hotline call. And by the way, you're not weak if you reach out for help. You're actually pretty darn strong, just to let people know.
Absolutely, yep.
And therapist was looking at me. She said, you know, what do you do when you wake up, you know, at night? I said, I get up and I turn every light on in the house. That time I had moved into a different bedroom for my wife because I was driving her nuts, not being able to sleep. And I didn't really understand the insomnia aspect. I just knew that I was frantic all the time, it seemed like. And I'd go from room to room to room. She says, well, try this next time it happens, which was that night, right? She says, when you get up, go into the bathroom and turn on the light and just look at that person in the mirror and let that person know how much you appreciate who they are. Tell them you love them, how much you like them. And I'm thinking, yeah, this is going to happen. So that night, I don't know, 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm wide awake. I turn on the light. I go into the bathroom, flip it on, and I look in the mirror, and I'm looking around to see who's watching me. Of course, I know I'm alone. And I look at myself in the mirror, and I say, I like you, man. And I really felt weird doing it. And then that was it. Then I went, you know, try to get back to sleep. I actually slept a little bit better. But as this went on, like next night, it was like, hey, I love you, man. And as this started to grow, that person I was talking to who was me, I was starting to believe and appreciate that person. And it was the first time in my life, based on what had happened to me between the third and fourth grade, when you're violated like that, you don't appreciate who you are, and you just never give yourself any approval, right? So it was
right.
The first time, and here I was in my early 50s, finally looking in a mirror and telling myself how much I appreciated who I was. That simple act doesn't have to be that you have insomnia. Just if you just want to strengthen your self-esteem, look in the mirror and tell yourself that you're a great person, that you appreciate yourself, that you have something to offer, and that you love that person, and you trust that person, and appreciate that person. And over, I don't know what the scientific methodology, it's got to be reinforcement, but it worked. And that was that simple technique right there was one of the things that I did to help get me out of that rabbit hole that I was in and to finally start appreciating who I was. And I think that we go through life, we had mentioned it before, we just want to be accepted. We just want the approval, like you mentioned earlier, we just want to be loved and appreciated, but we can't be loved and appreciated if we don't love and appreciate ourselves. I don't know, that just came out of nowhere, but that I think is a great remedy to put social media in perspective, that you don't need the approval from anybody online. You just don't.
Mm-mm.
And work on it, you know. So if the people building this stuff are telling you not to get on it or take a break, or they don't even let their own kids get on it, that's got to tell you something. I think that
that's
yeah.
Huge. I don't want to. I got to interrupt you for just 1 second. Hold your thought.
No, that's
but
fine.
You know, it's just now at our age what I'm seeing from my husband's. But the parents of the little kids, we're two generations steep into it right now, and there's parents that are not paying attention to what their kids are doing because their face is always in the phone and on social media. And so, you know, grandparents out there, you know, I guess, or some that haven't let themselves go down the rabbit hole that are parents. Because, you know, I think now that you mentioned it, I saw part of that show, because when he said that about walking away, I had thrown it out, but not for as long. It just long enough for you to see if you had a problem or not, you know what I mean? Obviously, then if you had a problem, I'm not a doctor, but I would suggest walking away much longer like he, but that is a great point that the people that created it don't let their kids on it. And then I don't know if it was in that same show, but, you know, I did a show one night on TikTok, and they have a thing on there. I'm not a member of that, but a listener turned me on to it, a thing called the TikTok Challenge, and I did 25 challenges, and they were all things that you could get seriously hurt or killed doing. And there were a number of brain injuries as a result. You know, one of them everyone is pretty much heard of. And then there were actually 25. I could have kept going. I stopped at 25. I found an article that had 25 disabling TikTok challenges and read them. And I was like, holy crap. But one of them was like, you know, you have three or four kids walking down the street together, and everybody except the one knows that at a certain point, as they're walking down a concrete road, one of them is going to kick their legs out from under one of the people, and they're going to fall. Well, a lot of those people are, you know, their heads bouncing off the concrete. And, you know, I found that super disturbing because that's a different level. I've never seen anything like that on Facebook before, especially to the level that where was it I saw? Because I wasn't on TikTok, but it must have been something from that that had made it over to YouTube or something. I don't know, but I was looking at the comments, and what shocked me is, first of all, a couple things. A, that they would be suggesting these things. B, that they would make this funny, potentially hurting, disabling, or killing people. Or property damage. You know, one of them for a really long time, and they were doing it in our neighborhood. Thank God they didn't catch our yard, or they might have caught some lead, was knocking down people's privacy fences, either like driving through part of a home's privacy fence or a group of maybe 10 kids with their arms locked together at 3 o'clock in the morning, running and kicking through a side of somebody's privacy fence. Now that's an aside. That's not one of the 25 that can hurt or injure you. That's property damage. But I just mean things like that, that are, you know, you could have a dog out there. It's your property. That could be $8,000 right there, you know, that kids knocked down. And again, to even pose that as entertainment, to frame it as something funny, and then it took me over the peak when I read the comments, because I assumed it was going to be other ignorant young people who thought it was funny and had comments to make about it, and I about fell over when there were parents, and their parents are probably in their, what, later 20s, early 30s, maybe? But parents were on there making comments about things being funny. Well, that's what I thought. And I was like, Jesus, if that's, you know, what they're getting out of their parents is, you know, from the social media and then affirmation from their parents that that's right, that that's funny, you know, that kind of goes, a lot of those things actually in the 25 thing I just mentioned, you know, that's a form of bullying too. You know, so in a backdoor kind of way, if you want to call it backdoor, it's not so much to me. You know, that's another form of bullying and affirming that it's okay to hurt other people, not just by not giving them the right amount of likes, but physically risking hurting or disabling them and thinking that it's something to laugh about, and then having parents ignorant enough to affirm that this is appropriate behavior and to not nip that in the bud, that it isn't a funny thing. And then I saw something interesting in the For What It's Worth, and that's that I knew that TikTok was CCP owned, but what I thought was interesting, and again, it was another one of these former employees of theirs that said, you know, they call it two different things. I can't think of the name, but it's the Chinese version of TikTok. And then there's TikTok. It's the same company. But the difference is, in China, they let you see only what they want you to see. And they open up things to the rest of the world, to our children, our young people, our population, that they won't let their own see. And it was interesting. There was a young man on there, teenage guy, I guess, and he was from there, had lived here, moved back there. I'm not sure why he did. He did prove a point, though, in this deal. He had a lot of tattoos, and he had an earring, which is pretty common in our country. But their phones, you know, like when you've been talking about, you know, I think we've all experienced this. When we've been talking about something with someone in our house or on the phone, and then we have an email about it, or we see a post about it, something we've just been talking about, and we have that, you know, if I don't have a tendency to be paranoid, but if I did, you know, it's weird because you're just talking to your wife.
Yeah, I have heard that. Well, even like if you Google something or you whatever, you know, a million things pop up, you know, that mm-hmm. have to do with that particular concept. You know, one thing that you raised in my mind is that those things with those kids and those adults that are reinforcing it and all that, you know, it's a form of bullying, like you said, but it also desensitizes people to behavior that's not good for a sustainable society.
Right.
You know, I was lucky that I had a teacher that was part of a curriculum when I was in school that was one of the required reading called the Amy Vanderbilt Book of Etiquette. And at the time I was in my late teens and I'm like, you know, why do we have to read this book? You know, etiquette, you know, I'm a guy, you know, and some of the things in that book stuck with me. And that to me was one of the, I'm so grateful for that teacher that she required mm-hmm. that book to be read, because we're missing a lot of that, Kim. You know, we're missing just niceties between each other, and you know, kicking somebody's legs out from underneath of them. A friend told me that there's crimes against property, and then there's crimes against people. And when you hurt other people and you're malicious about it, there's something definitely wrong by taking that path to really just want to hurt somebody for some kind of a reaction. You know, Natasha, when we talk about these things, it's like, where the hell are we going as not just an American society, but as a global society? You know,
well, and that's
like
why
that
I wondered, wouldn't...
Yeah.
Well, I mean, when this kid was sitting there, he turned on his phone and it showed caption, you know, that he knew that he was probably going to get kicked off when he went to go on, it's like DUGAN or something. ByteDance was the parent company. It split off to TikTok for all the rest of us. And for the Chinese population, it's this other name, but it's the same thing, only one is highly, you know. Well, anyway, the kid turned on his phone, and he had it on their version of TikTok for just a couple of minutes, and then it said, your account is suspended. What his account was suspended for, he was going live on that thing, like people can go live on Facebook, they don't allow you to have tattoos or an earring if you're a guy and be able to get on social media. We think we're censored. But this kid, you know, and it showed several different instances in the Chinese community where we think we have it bad with censorship here. We do. But, I mean, they're actually grooming their society in a different way. You know, I'm not judging the guy's tattoos and his earring one way or another, but I don't care what he does. But obviously, look at the societal view. They're sending to our country things like the challenge, the TikTok challenge of the week or whatever it is. And these things happen, like, I think it's every week they have a new challenge, and they're all along these lines, property damage or hurting someone or making an ass out of someone, publicly shaming them. None of it is good. They're sending that over here. But someone there who they doesn't fit their archetype of what a guy should look like, too many tattoos, you know, the earring, and they suspend their account. And then there was a young lady, and I thought she was kind of clever for a minute, and then they got her on the second time. But she was talking about the, are they the Uyghurs, the Islam group of people that, anyway, it's a political statement.
The Uyghurs.
Thank you. So this young lady,
it is.
This socially conscious young lady, she looked like she was maybe, I don't know, hard to tell. I don't know. The older I get, the harder it is for me to gauge age, but teenage girl. And she got on, went on live and started talking about the atrocity of that situation. They took her account, suspended her account. And when they suspend your account, it's like indefinitely. And they didn't want her, you know, talking about it. Well, what struck me then, anyway, she tried to do this trick, which I thought was cute. She had these really pretty, hot pink little eyelash curler. And so she was going to try to outfox them and make like she was doing a tape on how to use an eyelash curler. And so, you know, she'd pick up her, this is an eyelash curler, and, you know, she'd lean up and clip it on her eyelashes. And while she's in the process of looking like and acting like and saying some of the right things about demonstrating to you how to use the eyelash curler, she's slipping in statements about that situation, that political situation. Well, that didn't fool them long. They didn't shut it off right when she started talking, like within 5 or 10 minutes on that first one when she just came out with it. It took them a little while longer, but they took her account away. And the thing that I thought was kind of scary about that is just that they do manifestations of that here on our social media. You know, if they don't like what you're talking about, not to that extent, but when you watch the two of them side by side, you're going, huh, that happens in this country on social media. Bias, you know, bias is shown and censorship is doled out. You know, and that's another thing. I got to tell you, when it was March of 2020, so we had just found out that we had COVID in this country. And I had, you know, there's only a few settings for Facebook. Like, nobody but you can see what you post, or friends only, friends of friends. No, if you want to see it, you could be my friend or not. Or public. No, absolutely not. Not doing that. So my setting had always been on friends only. And one night, really late, I can't even see my phone anymore without reading glasses, but I looked on there and a thing said, push here to see how the public views your page. And I thought, huh, that's interesting. So I did, and it showed my full birth date. And I had never put that on there before. In fact, I made it a point not to put my birth year on there for security reasons. So had that not popped up, and I had had my page for a number of years, and I had a lot of, not that they were my best buds, okay, but I have been doing a show for a long time, and a lot of my listeners are friends, and I met some relatives doing genealogy. And the other thing that hurts to this day, and that was 2020, is that there were people, five people, maybe six people, that have died since then, that I can't access in that way anymore. And what happened was, all I did, I wasn't speaking politics. I wasn't telling them about their mama. I was doing nothing wrong, but try to change, get my birth year off there. And they took away my page. They locked my account that minute, told me I was locked out of my account, and that I needed to prove my age with two pieces of ID out of the list attached, and went on to say that you couldn't block anything off of the piece of ID because they needed to know that it was legitimate. And there were things on there like military ID, driver's license, birth certificate, just on and on, but you had to have two of these different things. Well, I had a really bad feeling about it at the time, and I just wanted to say, forget it. But it was late at night. I was shocked as hell that that would happen, that they would do that. And it wasn't a matter of if you like me. It was somebody invisible that doesn't have a phone number that you can't wrap your hands around their neck and ask them what the they're thinking. You know, they sure don't hesitate if they think you've broken a community standard, but they violate their own community standards all the time, you know, and they did that to me. You know, they did that to me. I never, for security reasons, had that up there, yet they were showing it. I went to change it. They took my account away. Well, that page has never come back to me, and I felt creepy that I put out those two pieces of ID that I did, and they still never gave me my account back. And there's no one you can call, no one you can write, and I felt, and this girl said this too, that the girl in China, it changed for me then. I didn't immediately get open another page. I kept trying to log in, thinking that, you know, I've done what they've asked, which they had no business. It was them that screwed up. They had no business to be mining more of my personal information from me when it was their mistake in the first place. And to take my page away for trying to make a correction was not right. And I tried writing them, and they kept saying that they were reviewing it. They were reviewing it. Obviously, they weren't. And every time I tried to log on, it was trying to ask me for more information. Finally, I just said, screw it. And I did walk away from, it was about 3 months. And then finally, Craig, our owner, said to me, Kim, your co-admin on, you have no idea how many pages your co-admin on that have to do with People First and TBI Survivor Network and Brain Injury Radio. And he said, if I ever get kicked off, we lose it all. You've got to start a new page, even if you don't use it. And I did, you know, and I've had this page, but I've got to say that it made it much easier at that point. And like I said, I didn't have a problem with it in the first place, but it makes it much easier. You feel violated. I mean, I felt violated. I was violated. And so the level of trust and the level of fun and some of the things I felt before got taken away. And that's what this young lady said. You know, my God, I can't say, in her case, she couldn't say what was on her mind, you know, without somebody invisible pulling the plug on her and not liking the feeling that that leaves you with, because it is a feeling of violation, you know, and that shouldn't happen. I'm not saying, you know, some of the things that I don't know all of what goes on because I don't spend enough time. Maybe some people, I hesitate to even say, maybe some people need to be censored. But I mean, for the people I know who have gotten censored, there was no reason, you know, they didn't say anything that was wrong. You know, they didn't say anything that was wrong. They might have voiced an opinion, but it wasn't like something overtly racial or overtly sexual or, you know, anything like that. But I've never felt the same, which makes it a heck of a lot easier to just, you know, check once a day and wish people happy birthday. I do like that service, thank you. You know, that it tells when people's birthdays are and stuff. But I never got that page back, and I think of it when I see the birthdays sometimes. It's weird what gets to you, because obviously those people aren't there anymore, but there's a guy who used to, a survivor, who used to come here every Wednesday night, and Alan, I've got a couple of his songs on here, but I actually got to meet him once because he lived in a city 50 miles away. And what's really weird, he is a huge guy and so sweet and childlike and vulnerable, easy to love. And all my regular listeners at that time, everybody knew Alan, and he couldn't drive anymore because of his brain injury, so he rode a bike. And he played in a piano bar for part of his job, and then a couple nights a week he went to a laundromat. Wednesday night happened to be the night he was pulling duty at the laundromat, so he would call in and listen to the show. And back then I had a lot more shows, call-in shows, where we were talking, and so Alan would call in and talk. And one night a year before, this was really weird, I mean, I've got it on tape, but a year before it happened, he said he had a recurring dream, and it was that, you know, he rode this bicycle, and he was a huge guy, but he had this dream that some night somebody wasn't going to be paying attention and that a car would hit him. And about a year later,
he kept having that dream.
And it's on tape. He said it to all of us. Like, we're sitting here right now. He said it to everybody. It's on tape on the show. And the other thing, you know, I'm a dog lover, you know I am, and he loves his dog. And the song that I've got at the beginning, he says his one dog's name was Wigwag. And he says, come on, Wigwag, come on. And then he starts singing this song. And so he's telling us about this dream, and a year later, almost scary, to really close to the same day. I'm watching the news, and because I only live 50 miles away, you know, it's our capital city, it shows a deal of an accident. And then it shows the name, and a van had run a stop sign and hit a man on a bicycle and killed him.
But it wasn't
And
him.
It was him.
Oh,
it was
God.
Him. It was him. And, you know, this might sound weird, but every time it tells, you know, when it's somebody's birthday every year, I had a number of years where, you know, I'd go to Alan's page and wish him a happy heavenly birthday, you know, look at him and think about the things we had talked about on the show and off the show and the time we met, and just kind of like when you go to a cemetery, I guess, you know, you sit there and reflect. And when they took my page away, they took away Alan. They took away five other people that I had been close to, but, you know, never to be gotten back again. There's just, you know, they have no idea the consequence of what they're screwing around with, you know, and I watch them testifying in court and going through all this crap that they're going through, and I look at the harm that they do. I mean, the harm they did to me, you know, I'm talking about kids and predators and isms and stuff that don't affect me. But that was something that really affected me, and I didn't have any fault in it.
Well, that's the thing.
Anyway.
Sometimes you, on the computer, you know, you feel so powerless at times, and, you know, we become accustomed to and dependent on these devices, and when somebody takes that control away, it can definitely mess with your head, that's for sure.
Control, definitely. I mean, yeah, definitely.
I know a couple of women like you that deal with sex trafficking, and I know that this computer has become a huge tool for not only, you know, for grooming and also just in, you know, that world. You know, this computer has opened up the world to a lot of good things, probably more good things than bad, but there's also that side. And they you know, you can actually be manipulated by your own devices if you allow it. It's an interesting world,
oh,
computer. In so many ways,
definitely.
It's brought us together, and then so many ways it's isolated us. You know,
yeah,
so.
Well, it is what it is, but don't get too attached. Just
no, and I,
know
and
it
I remember,
for what
I think
it is.
I bought my first laptop was like 2009, so think about that. And I remember I had a website for my company back in 1991 when people didn't, you know, I thought it was really cool to have sound on a website. And it just, between 1991 and 2009, I mean, it was like light years. And then now technology, you mentioned editing, but you can make movies, you can make videos, you can do audio, you can do pictures and doctor them up. You can, there's so much you can do with these computers now. It's crazy. You know, those are the good things that we can use these computers for. But you mentioned something earlier that I think is wise, is that, you know, go outdoors every now and then. You know, go outside and see what the real world's like at times. You know, that can be a good elixir, too, to take you away from this world that at times can frustrate us and get us so upset. Yeah.
Well, I think it's good what you mentioned earlier about keeping the social skills in check, because a lot of people don't know how to, you know, they're used to operating in a sense invisibly. You know, you're there, but you're in a virtual world, untouchable. It's not the same as having human interaction, you know, and it's just really important to be able to have human interaction, especially, you know, there's a lot of people. My husband for the last couple of years has been working at home and works on the computer, and our offices are in the same room. It's a good thing we get along. So when you were talking about when we've been talking about relationships before, I was glad. I mean, he worked on a base, and so there were people flying in and out of there, and COVID was going crazy, and I've got underlying conditions, and I was glad when they sent him home to work. And but our office is in the same room, and I was used to having the office all day to myself. And
right.
this didn't used to bother me. My husband didn't know me before my brain injury, but when he comes in, I mean, he might be walking in for a second and he flips on music, and then he might walk out and go eat breakfast, maybe take a shower, go out with the dogs, get distracted, rake some leaves, do whatever. And I can't focus when the music's on. and it's been interesting. We haven't had any big issues about adapting to this, except that I've had to say a couple of times, I would appreciate it if you're not going to be in the room, if you would leave the music
yeah.
off, because I find it really hard to focus. And like right now I'm writing a new book, and it takes focus, because it's not, you know, like the other two, they were my stories. And so I was just spitting out what I knew. And this one has taken a ton of research, and I've got this pile of research, and finally I realized, you know, this research could go on for the rest of my life and could be a freaking encyclopedia. So I need to figure out where I'm going to start and stop, and start and stop, you know, make my point, and pick out, pardon me, the best of the examples. And I've got to start writing, or I'm going to exhaust myself in research and never write this book. So, you know, when I'm writing particularly, I really need to focus. And I'll say this because he's getting ready to retire, but, you know, he works for the government, and the meetings that they have changed. And you've probably heard something about it on the news. People aren't racing to sign up for our military right now. Different issues
have
come up.
Quotas, that's, yeah.
Well, these meetings that they have, it's so good I'm not in them. Like, I could never be military. You know, one thing I gave my husband was spontaneity, and because he lived in a pretty rigid world. You know, he was 20 years in the Air Force and then 20 years working for the government. So you can imagine how much latitude is in that. And he marries Miss Spontaneity, Miss Impulsivity, you know. And it was good, you know, because he's a calming force in my life, and I'm the fun, spontaneous force in his life that he hadn't enjoyed. But, you know, I was on Amazon one day, and I saw these, it looks like a big jar of vitamins or something, but they were pink, and what they were was earplugs. And I had asked him, kind of like with the music, because of those meetings, I just found it very irritating what they were talking about. And what does this have to do with military? You know, what really, you guys are really taking time to talk about this. Okay. I can't stand it. So I got these earplugs, but what was pretty funny is the day that I got them, I walked back to him. I was planning on using them for me to not hear those meetings. And when I walked in, it says earplugs right on it. I walked in. I didn't tell him I had ordered them, but when they came, I walked in and he was at his desk and I held him out and I said, check these out. And he took them from me. And I said, no, no, those aren't for you. He said, they're not. I said, no, you're getting paid to be in those meetings. I'm not, you know, so the earplugs are for me. That's why they're pink. But certainly you're welcome to use them if you want to. But he's getting ready to retire, so I think he's feeling about the same about some of those meetings as I do at this point. But it's just pretty interesting how things have changed. So tell us about the poetic
human.
Yeah,
they always do. That's one thing you can count on. Everything changes. You know, but the one thing that doesn't change is that you always have a choice, no matter what you're doing in your life. You don't know, you know, if you want to change things, you know, and sometimes it takes diligence and it takes a commitment, but if you want to change, you definitely can change your lifestyle no matter what you've been through and what you're, you know, what you want to change. And I read somewhere it takes up to, if you can change a habit for 3 weeks, you pretty much can eradicate that habit, whatever it is you're doing. You know,
yeah.
And as you know, any a brain injury adds a different slice to the pie. I personally think that, you know, the adjustment from the brain injury to coming back to some normalization takes hard work, for sure. But in many ways, I feel like I'm a lot more, I don't know, observant. I look at things differently, you know, since the injury. But that transition period was definitely rough. And it was nice to go through CBT to realize that, you know, that you could definitely, you had all the power to make the changes in your life. And, you know, you mentioned
And I highly recommend, I'm sorry, when you're done saying what you're saying, tell folks a little. We've talked about it a little bit before, but I spent about 3 years in heavy-duty CBT, going to individual twice a week and group once a week, and I did that for like 3 years. And you're right, that does give you your power back to be able to make choices when you thought, you know, when you really were powerless and struggling. I've got to say that was really empowering as far as the tools that it gave me to be able to reach out for when I'm having trouble. It also, just going through it to the intensity that I did, it was a preemptive strike toward a lot of things that could have come up that didn't, just because I had that knowledge. You know, and at times when something does come up, I'm really grateful to have that tool. So I highly recommend. Now, so here's two of us, everybody listening, that have been through CBT, and it's really worth the time.
It is worth the time. And you know, and sometimes we don't take the time for ourselves. And a lot of times if you're feeling inadequate, you go way over above board to help others. And a lot of times, you know, we ignore ourselves, and that's where the self-care comes in. And, you know, we read about it, we hear about it, and you know, what is self-care? And it's really taking care of yourself ahead of everybody else. And people will say, well, isn't that selfish? And it really isn't. You know, if you don't take care of yourself, then who is? And that's a great question. You know, you talk about CBT and, you know, it gives you the skill sets that you need to live a fulfilled life and find a certain level of happiness in it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I know that and it takes work. You know, there was another concept that I came up with that really keeps us a lot of times stuck. And I call it the square one syndrome. You know, we've been raised, you know, think about it this way. On New Year's, we have all these resolutions, right? Let's say we're going to quit smoking. So we go 11 days and we haven't had a cigarette in 11 days. Then on day number 12, we're Jones and we decide we want one. So we smoke one. And we made a mistake. And we feel like we're a loser or we can't stay committed. And so we're right back to square one. And we start out with number one again. And I always wondered why every year are people making the same resolutions. And it's because I just tied it back to always going back to square one. So what I would say is, so you quit smoking again and you go to day 11, you have that cigarette and you make a mistake. Well, don't beat yourself up and start back on square one again. Start on square 11. Just go from 11 to 11. Then you don't smoke for another 2 weeks. And you get to day 30 and you have a cigarette. So rather than go from 30 back to one again, go from 30 to 30 and then start over from there. And then after a while, you're going to look in your journal or however you're tracking it, and you're going to say, you know what? I've got 176 days of victory of not smoking or whatever it is you're trying to eradicate in your life or change. And so I call that the breaking the myth of square one, that you're going to make mistakes, but every time you make a mistake doesn't mean that you're a loser and that you're going to start back on square one again. It just means that you made a mistake and you're going to pick up the pieces and you're going to go on. And so I told that concept to a couple of guys and they called to thank me, you know, several months later. And, you know, a guy would go, I'm on day 411. You know, I said, well, did you have any days where you didn't? He said, oh, yeah, they're in there. They're in my journal. But I've shared that concept with a few different people, and it's really helped them. You know, we're thinking of healing processes. So I say break the myth of square one and add victories to your repertoire of self-help and self-improvement, if you will. Yeah,
I think that's great advice. No, I like that.
But,
I think it's great.
And that's one of the things we were raised with. So when we're trying to change things, how many times, though, have you done that, though, Kim? Where you've tried to break a habit and you go along for a good week or two and then you break the habit and then you go like, what's the use? You don't count the 14 days of victory. You count the one day of when you made the mistake. And so, I don't know. It's just, you know, some of the things that we've been raised on, raised to believe, just need to be shattered. I mean, we need to break those stereotypes and those things that we're told that we need to believe in. And I'm not saying to break the rules. What I'm saying is make a conscious decision to self-improve and to not fall prey to the stories that keep us stuck. You know?
Yeah, I don't mind breaking the rules. That's why I like that, because I don't know, there's a lot of years of shaming and blaming, and it's a waste of time. And basically by taking away, going back to the first step or, you know, to the first box, you're taking away the blame and the shame, which is a waste of time. and you're focusing on the positive and moving forward, which I think is great. We don't need that. You know, I used to think that you had to put up with that because there were so many people that did it, you know, blamed or shamed you, and then younger days. And I absorbed that and started thinking that way. And you're talking about unlearning patterns that weren't productive, you know, doing things to hate yourself a little bit more just isn't
reinforcing
advisable.
All that negativity, you know.
Yeah, it stacks up, and then you start, you know, doing what I did, which was leaning into unproductive behavior as a habit, you know, hurting myself because of that belief system, and how freeing to let go of that belief system and understand that it's just a belief system. It isn't one I have to buy into. You know, it was one that was modeled and that I absorbed and took on like it was my reality for a lot of my younger years, but that's not carved in stone, you know. I have a new reality now, and it doesn't count that. You know, I don't make New Year's resolutions anymore. I haven't for a long time. I just think of goals that I would like to achieve, and doing it in a obtainable way, you know, having a realistic expectation of it, whatever the goal might be. And so, you know, I'm not buying a new treadmill.
No,
I think
I
had a treadmill in my 20s and my 30s and my 40s. And you know, you can't give those damn things away. And they're so heavy. They always wind up in your basement. And you're trying to give them away. And nobody wants to come and get it for free because they're so freaking heavy to bring up basement steps. So, not doing that. But I think it's good to think of the fact that thinking patterns that come naturally to us aren't always healthy and productive thinking patterns, and that we don't need anybody's permission to change, you know, to unlearn. And of course, when you unlearn something,
we're all, you know, that's one thing that's come out of it. You know, we're all finding our way. I'm not going to say we can say we're in the same boat. You know, we're on the same planet, and but we are kind of. What did I read the other day? There was something I read the other day that was pretty fantastic. Let me see if I can find it. But it was basically. Hold on here. I was having this conversation, and it was, we're basically all, I was actually interviewing the mother of Charles Manson's Jr.'s, she was married to Charles Manson Jr. Oh, here it is.
Wow.
We are not victims. We are humans dealing with our own troubles,
mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that if we took that to heart, you know, the next time we're out and about and the next time we have an interaction with somebody, maybe it doesn't seem like it's going the right way, but maybe if we just believe or try to understand that they might be going through something too, if that makes any sense, that we're all human beings going through very similar things, you know.
Were you? Did you just read that, or were you talking to that person?
No. I read it. No. I interviewed her on one of my podcasts, and that was one
That's
of the things
what I was
that she
wondering.
Came up. Yeah, that we are not victims. We are merely humans dealing with our own troubles, all in the same way.
I wonder what it felt like. Did you ask her what it felt like to... I never thought of Manson having kids before, I guess, for example. You know, his name is etched in our history. You know, I don't know how young you have to be to remember that, but that was a huge deal in our history. Obviously, his kid is someone different, but I wonder what it was like to be his kid and then to be married to his kid.
Well, his story is really interesting. You know, Charles Manson Jr. changed his name because he couldn't live with the stigma of being a Manson, and so he became Jay White. But then when ended up happening was he ended up, you know, he changed his name, but when the murders occurred, he literally, he really couldn't put up with it. And so he committed suicide. Charles Manson Jr., AKA Jay White, committed suicide when my client was 15. So he didn't want, it was tough. It's a very, you know, the whole Charles Manson, not we want to get off on the whole Charles, but the whole Charles Manson story, there's a lot about Charles Manson that a lot of people, we were taught coming along. But since I've found out some things, a lot of the things that we knew or were told about Charles Manson just weren't true. But that's
really?
A very painful, very, very painful life, and came from a long line of troublemakers. But he dealt with it as best he could. Kind of, that's an interesting story, and that's a whole other podcast episode for sure. The pain of living with the legacy.
No.
Yeah.
No, I got you. I was just curious. It brought back that time, and I have a cousin who lives in California, which it wasn't Manson, but she and her husband were one of the few. I think there was only them and one other person that lived through the Night Stalker, Richard Ramirez. And
yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. It seems like a lot of that cluster of those mass murders and things were happening out in California back, was it the 80s?
70s, 80s? Well, 60s. You know, Manson was 1968 or 69. But you're right. There was a lot of stuff going on back in the day. And there was the, you know, Richard Ramirez, and there was the BTK guy, and that would be a whole interesting story, you know? Whole other
conversation. Jenny doesn't. She doesn't talk about it or give her okay when movies and things are on. She doesn't participate in that. And when you said that, there was a victims' rights group, and Sharon Tate's mom was in the victims' rights group, and my cousin was in it for a short time. There was some company putting out like baseball cards, but they were collectibles of serial killers. And they didn't think it was appropriate, and they wanted that to stop. And so my cousin was acquainted with Sharon Tate's mom, but then she went a different direction. You know, she didn't want to write a book. She didn't want to be interviewed. She doesn't want it on they're depicted in movies, but not with permission or having had an interview with her. So, you know, anytime that they're shown in a movie about him, they're really just having to go on court records and what was in the newspaper, because she doesn't give interviews about it. They had a have a child, but had to be a really weird feeling. She just woke up one night. This is back, you know, you talk about crime now and how much things have changed, and that we grew up at a time, you know, where you could leave your doors unlocked and your windows open and not worry about it. And, you know, it was back during that time. And they had their daughter was two or three at the time. And she woke up, heard a noise. Her and her husband were in bed asleep, and she woke up and there was a man standing over the bed. She screamed. He shot her, and wow. The husband woke up and threw himself over his wife, and he shot him. And then after just being shot, the husband stood up and chased him. And what he was trying to do was protect his three-year-old daughter. And so he, with a bullet near his spine, got up and ran. And Ramirez was freaked out because just about everybody shot, he killed on the spot, you know, so he wasn't used to people getting up and chasing him. So he ran and he turned around and fired again, but Pete went down in front of his daughter's door and, you know, and he ran, and my cousin got shot in the face. Went in one side cheek and out the other under her ear, and talk about trauma. It just wasn't something she felt she needed to publicize, you know, or make a buck off of. And at the time, like I said, their daughter was three, so there had to be some things that child had to be aware of, not the reality of what happened at the time, but the trauma that both of her parents had gone through. You know, that's not something like you get over real fast. And so
the whole thing with trauma too, you know, that I read where as much as 75%, probably even higher than that, you know, of human beings on the planet have been through a trauma. And it could be an assault. It can be something like you just talked about. It can be a TBI. It can be the loss of a dream job. It could be a financial burden, the death of a parent or a child or a pet. You know, we've all been touched by a trauma somewhere, or a very high percentage. And then I read where it's as high as 40%. Have had multiple traumas. So if we think about those numbers, we live on a planet with a population where every single human being has been touched by something. And even if you mm-hmm. haven't had the trauma directly, you know somebody that's been through one. And think about that. Is this not a target-rich environment for self-healing? Isn't it?
Yeah.
It's amazing what the human brain and the human being can do if they set their mind to doing it. You know, I've heard people say, well, I can't change, or you're never going to change. But you know what? I don't believe that. I believe that all of us have the capabilities to change our lives at any moment. It just
Me
takes
too.
A conscious effort. Yeah. It's just
no,
being
and in
conscious
self-defense, I think you have to. Sometimes.
Absolutely. And that's what this whole journey is all about. It's like make the most of every single day. And then, you know, but all these mm-hmm. things that we talk about, you know, sometimes they take these words like the word gratitude, and they use it so often
yeah.
and so long, and it's misused at times. And sometimes words don't even have any meaning anymore. It's like, gosh, you know, we could go down that whole racism, and gosh, they just take words from the language and they distort them to where the meanings become not what the meanings we're meant to be. And that can confuse people. You know, we mm-hmm. long for the past at times, but we can't go back. We have to make the best. I was talking to a guy today. You know, they say that, you know, you can only live in the moment, right? Which is true.
Mm-hmm.
But is the moment just a thin line? He goes, I think the moment is a fuzzy line, because the moment could be a week. It could be a day. It could be a month, you know, a time period in your life. And so not everything is written in stone. And it gets back to that choice again. We make the choice on how we're going to react to any given circumstance. And I was talking to a guy who lost his son in Iraq.
Hmm.
He was blown up by an IED, and it was just, I can't even imagine. It was such a shock to their family and to him in particular. And he said, you know what, John? It doesn't get any better. But what gets better, or it doesn't get any better, it just gets different. He says, the difference is how I cope with those feelings of loss. I thought that was pretty cool. You know, it doesn't get any better. We still get triggered. You know, certain things come to us. If you've been through post-traumatic stress, and TBI is part of that, and other things that we've done in our life that have affected us, and those triggers still come. The difference is, what are you going to do about them? Are you going to continue with behaviors and thoughts that you don't like, that keep you there? Or are you going to say, today, when you get triggered, I'm not going to let this affect me that way? That was pretty cool. I thought, you know, doesn't get any better. It just gets different. And that difference can make all the difference in the world on how our lives become fulfilled, successful or not.
He's absolutely right, too. That was pretty profound, because when you think about situations in your own case, or I think of situations in mine, I think that that's true. It's not like things don't still really sting sometimes, you know, like they did at the moment, but we have found a way to,
to lessen the blow, you know, to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's so true. But can't we, isn't it amazing, though, when you think about it, that how much we can learn from each other if we just take the time to be open-minded and to just listen to each other? And when we start to find the commonalities is when we can really have tremendous personal growth. You know, and you mentioned it earlier, you know, we're in a constant change, you know, mode of change. And it's just about dealing with the journey. You know, what a journey it's been, my gosh. There's probably so much more we could talk about, but what a journey. I mean, when you think about your life or my life, and with all the stuff that we've been exposed to or been through, and think about every single human that we pass on the street, on the sidewalk, or wherever, shopping at the mall, every single one of us has a story. And we're just kind of looking for a way to thrive, aren't we?
Yeah.
Some people give up. I hope they, you know, we people like us need to inspire and motivate. And many times, and by telling these stories and having these conversations, that anybody listening out there, if you're still with it, Kim and I, and you're going through something really tough, I can assure you, there's light at the end of the tunnel, and that
mm-hmm.
the sun will, wherever you are, the sun will come up tomorrow. Might be raining, but it's still going to come up. And don't give up. One of my buddies, when I was in a real bad place, when I was starting with my divorce, and I saved my marriage, but I was in a real bad place. And I called my buddy, who used to own a professional football team, and we talked, and he said, you know, I know you, John, and I know this. I'm going to tell you two words. Keep going. And this is when I was right after, not long after my head injury and thought I was losing my wife and going through all that. That's what he said to me. He just said, keep going. Just keep going. Tomorrow's another day. And the sun will come up. Keep going. You have it in you to make the changes you need to make in your life, to turn it around and to make it better every single day, and just build on it. You've been through CBT, so you know all about that, and many of the guests that you've had probably have a similar advice like that, that survivors and have that in common.
Yeah, I encourage people to go get help if they, you know, if you haven't sought help. I know it's very hard in the traditional medical model. Fine, it's better. It's a little better now. She says tongue in cheek, you know, than it was years ago, you know, but now, and this is another podcast too, but, you know, the healthcare system will save your life, but you don't really get a, no pun intended, heads up or a lot of help or direction or centralized care for all the residuals you're going to take down the road with you. The physical things, the emotional things, the stuff, because your life as you knew it just got turned upside down. And there's a lot of reverb from a lot of directions from that. And the medical profession doesn't seem to be the place, at least for me and a lot of people that call in here, to be the place where you get the answers. So, you know, what I've found to be most helpful, at least it was for me, and I'm so grateful I found this, is peer-to-peer support, you know, somebody who actually understands it and has walked the road. I've gotten ideas about things to pursue and modeled behavior after people that, you know, have been on my show, and it's just really helped to know others, because from 95, when you said that, and I'll make it quick, you know, I was a financial consultant and my job was selling. I didn't type. And so when the first computers came out with that perforated paper on the end of it, the printer and stuff, you know, that was not derogatorily the, you know, the most successful executive has a wonderful support staff. And if they don't, they don't fare so well. But my secretary, you know, the first computer was her updated IBM Selectric. I was late to the computer game too, because I didn't need a typewriter, and that's what it was, you know, when it first came out for us. And then what it amounted to is a lot more work for us, you know, than going out and prospecting and selling and meeting people. We had to do our own proposals instead of calling, you know, and all the things the computer allows you to do. Yeah, when somebody else, you know, did that job, you know, and then we all kind of had to figure out how to do it. But, you know, I think peer-to-peer support is really important. So not it, and especially, you know, as COVID's done whatever it's done, it's still out there, but not isolating and being afraid. You know, if you are on social media, there are a lot of groups, brain injury related groups. And whether it's there or if you've got a personal group in your city. We don't happen to, but I know a lot of them do. Here, John's, there's a lot of people that have a means where other people who have had brain injuries gather, and that's a place you know you're not alone. That's a place when you hear people speak, they're telling your story, and it validates and gives you the hope back. Because I went from 95 to 2012 when I started working here, and I had never met another survivor. I thought I was the only one. And my last thing, and we're winding down, but was the first time I called into this show, and Craig, the guy who started it, was talking, and he said he lived in a world of post-it notes was the first thing I heard. And I'm alone listening, right? But my face turns red, and I feel like I'm looking around like a kid who's gotten caught with their hands in the cookie jar. I really thought I was the only one. And I was so tired because I was losing my post-it notes, forgetting where I put my post-it notes. And here's this guy, you know, I dial in, and that's the first thing I hear. And that had been my life since 1995. Nobody told me that was normal or to expect that or anything about that. And then you talk about that shame stuff. I was supposed to be, because my life had been saved, grateful. And I was supposed to be fixed. And so I didn't talk to people, you know, about what was going on with me and those compensatory strategies I was trying to bumble through on my own. Hell, I learned more the first year here than I had in the decade before when I was on my own. So, you know, if you're listening, one of the things that makes it a lot easier to keep going and not quit is peer-to-peer support, sticking close to those like you. We all have a different story, but if you've had a brain injury, you know, the brain is the brain, and we all go through a lot of similar stuff, emotional roller coaster, memory issues, sleep issue, sensory overload, overstimulation. You know, I've got a laundry list of things somewhere, but, you know, we share a lot of the same challenges. And when we change, the dynamic of everyone in our relational world changes. You know, some people aren't our friends anymore, but we get new ones, you know, that know us better. And then we have those few friends that John was talking about, you know, the ones that you can really count on to be there for you. And then your goal is to build a support group. And a lot of times that's going to be peers, people that have been through the same thing. And so what would you like to close with? Thank you for being here tonight. I'm really glad that you did. You know, sometimes I love to have people on as a guest that I just like a lot and like to talk to, but we don't ever. So the only way to do it is book a show.
I appreciate the opportunity, and it just, you know, there's so much we can talk about, but it is, you know, I just remember, you know, we can always have tidbits of wisdom. I always say polarization only works in sunglasses. It doesn't work in sustainable communities or in relationships. And so try to find ways to, you know, to deal in a more positive way with yourself, but with others around you. And I think that this is an exciting time. You know, there's a lot of crazy stuff going on, but we can be the difference in the world. We can be the difference in our own world and in the worlds of the people we interface with. And like you said, just keep going. You know, the brain injury doesn't make you any less. To me, it makes you just a little bit better. That's what I like to say and believe anyway. So, you know, I think something My website is it has a T in there. I think I remember at the beginning. It's JOHNT, as in Thomas, and then Crotech. So johntcrotech.com. But, you know, visit, we didn't even get into the poetic human discussion, but there's so much going on. These last couple of hours have just flown by. Yeah. Just,
I know.
Thank you for having me, and, you know, we'll do it again, I hope, sometime.
Absolutely. And, folks, I'm going to, as soon as we get off, I'm going to put the tea in there. When I told you that earlier, you should have caught me earlier. In my program notes, it says John Crotech, but immediately when we get off, I'll go in there and change it to a T. So that automatically truncates to everywhere where it's, where that show link is. So John T, KROTEC.com. And make sure to check them out. Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving. Happy holidays if I don't talk to you. Stay warm.
Same to you, Kim. I appreciate the opportunity. Say hey to your hubby and keep up the great work. What you're doing is useful.
Thanks, you too.
And we need more shows like this, but it's been an honor, and I'm humbled to be here. Thank you.
Thanks, John. Good night.
Good night. Thank you.
Okay, folks. I'm going to close the show with another veteran tonight. This is Tim Beckley. I'm sorry, Tim Beckley and Brainstorm. He, too, is a veteran. So for Veterans Day, we had John Crotech, and this is Tim Beckley with Brainstorm, something we can all relate to, and I will see you next week.
Baghdad, to Basra, the boss from the Bakersfield, the hottest battle they ever fought, raging inside of me. My brain has been battered, scrambled and rattled. No one knows what's going on with me. I walk the halls and I've climbed the walls. Drink everything inside and swallowed all I could find. Look for stronger things to cool my weary mind. Put that 8-ball and 38 won't save my life. 'Cause I have brainstorms, I have brainstorms, and I can't wait till that morning light comes. Found hope, most peculiar grace, by the grace of God, I'm still in the human race. Broke free from this broken brain, restore my will, refound my faith. 'Cause I had brainstorms, I have raised storms, but now I can't wait till that morning light shines.